from the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon and welcome to Washington Watch, broadcasting from the heart of our nation's capital. We bring you the latest insight, analysis, and interviews on the most pressing issues facing you and your family. Well, let me tell you what, it's good to be back in the States after spending last week in Israel. I certainly appreciate Jody Heiss filling in for me while I was in the Holy Land. I may actually talk a little bit more about what I learned last week later. But first, speaking of Israel, the headlines are buzzing as the rift between the Democrats and Israel seems to be widening.
The majority of Israelis support the policies of my government. Oh. It's not a fringe government. It represents the policies supported by the majority of the people. If Senator Schumer opposes these policies, he's not opposing me. He's opposing the people of Israel.
That was Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu on yesterday's CNN State of the Union, pushing back on the comments last week by Senate leader Chuck Schumer, saying that the Israelis should basically dissolve their government. The Biden administration, though, is reportedly coupling its anti-Israel rhetoric with anti-Israel policies. Pennsylvania Congressman Scott Perry joins me in just a moment. While slow-walking military support to Israel, President Biden, in his State of the Union message, unveiled plans to fast-track material to the Palestinians in Gaza by building a port in the terrorist strip. Frank Gaffney with the Center for Security Policy will join me for that conversation. And Congress, when they return tomorrow, will be faced with a Friday night government funding deadline that, quite frankly, will be difficult to meet. The Biden administration's refusal to secure the border is standing in the way of government funding. We'll talk about it. Also, the Supreme Court earlier today heard oral arguments in what could be the biggest First Amendment case in decades.
Regardless of the means that the government tries to use to pressure the platforms to commit censorship against third parties, the Constitution really doesn't care about that. It's the fact that what the government is trying to accomplish is the suppression of speech.
That was the Louisiana Solicitor General J. Benjamin Aganagya before the Supreme Court this morning. Two states, Missouri and Louisiana, sued the Biden administration for using social media companies to censor the First Amendment rights of critics. I'll be joined by the Attorney General of Missouri, Andrew Bailey, a little later on this edition of Washington Watch. And one of the individuals targeted by the Biden administration's censoring efforts was medical expert Dr. Jay Bhattacharya. Dr. Bhattacharya joins us to discuss a new report on the government's response to COVID that shows why he was censored. He was right, and the government was wrong. He joins us later. All of this and maybe a little bit more on this Monday edition of Washington Watch. But before we dive into the details of today's issues, let's remember the bedrock principles that guide us here at Washington Watch: faith, family, and freedom. These are not just words, but values that form the very foundation of our nation's greatness. So whether you're joining us from the heart of D.C. or from the heartland of America, we're here. This program, Washington Watch, is here to equip you and encourage you to stand up, speak up, and be a part of the solution. All right, earlier today, President Biden and Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu spoke on the phone for the first time in direct interaction in more than a month. And during the call, the Prime Minister agreed to send a team of officials to Washington to discuss Israel's plan and their operation in Rafah, which is said to be Hamas's last major stronghold in the Gaza Strip. Now, will the Biden administration support Israel's effort, or will they continue to question them, as they've increasingly been doing? Joining me now to discuss this and more, Congressman Scott Perry. He serves on three House committees, including the Foreign Affairs Committee and the Committee on Oversight and Accountability. He represents the 10th Congressional District of Pennsylvania. Congressman Perry, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Well, it's great to be with you, Tony. And I looked at the—I watched those comments from President Netanyahu regarding Chuck Schumer, and I just—I couldn't help but thinking, if only the left and if only Chuck Schumer were as tough on China as he is on Israel. If only that were the case, wouldn't the world be a different place? This administration and the left have been, unfortunately, co-opted by the extreme radical anti-Semitic portion of their party, and you're seeing it in the comments of Chuck Schumer at this point. It's amazing.
It's very troubling, Congressman. As I was in Israel last week, I actually sat down with the prime minister, and they clearly would like to have America's support, but they are undeterred because they know their future is at stake, and they have to eliminate the threat of Hamas. But I want to ask you a question, Congressman Perry. What if the Republican leadership, let's say the House Speaker Mike Johnson, were to question the funding for Ukraine and say, you know what, I just don't know that we want to support Ukraine. The people of Ukraine need to, you know what, they need to have an election because there's a lot of questions about the capability of President Zelensky to execute this war against the Russians. Don't you think the left would be up in arms?
Of course they would be outraged by all of that. Yet when it's Israel, they seem to have forgotten on October 7th that 1,300 Jews were massacred or taken captive, raped, held hostage, etc. They seem to forget that. And they also seem to have no problem in meddling in Israel's leadership and trying to take out the official. It seems like to be the official policy of the Biden administration is to take the prime minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, out of office. But heaven forbid that anybody have an opinion about an American election or the election in Ukraine or Russia or China, for that matter.
I mean, this is incredible. One of our strongest allies, really in the world, certainly in the Middle East, is Israel. And in fact, they're the stabilizing force in a very difficult neighborhood over there in the Middle East. And we're talking about, in the middle of a war, them dissolving their government. And we know how long it took to form a government last time. How would they be able to defend themselves and execute a war in such a situation? This, to me, is probably one of the, I don't know, America's future, I believe, is intertwined with that of Israel. Just from a standpoint of you know, looking at this both militarily, politically, and spiritually, this absolutely makes no sense, what is being pushed by the Biden administration.
Well, it's time for America to wake up to the uncomfortable but realistic fact that the left, the Democrat Party, President Biden and his administration is on both sides of this war. They have been for a very long time since he came in. They're helping Iran and all of Iran's proxies, including Hamas, including Hezbollah, Islamic Jihad, the Houthis, you name it. And so they shouldn't be surprised, unfortunately, with this radical divergence from supporting Israel to now wanting to support Israel as long as Israel will allow Hamas to exist and continue to threaten the very existence of Israel every single day. And I think that there should be a major realignment on regarding which party people support. If you don't support Israel in this, and President Biden and his party clearly do not, many within the party right. In the halls of Congress are now opposed to Israel, that should inform the American people.
I think you're absolutely right. This is one of those very stark, starkly divided issues. I mean, there's one that's clear contrast between the two parties on this issue. But I want to press you on a minute because I want you to talk to our listeners and our viewers about this. You talk about supporting Iran, supporting Hamas. That's not rhetoric. That's what we've been doing with our funding. Explain that.
Right. Well, that's exactly right. We have removed the sanctions from Iran. They've received hundreds of billions of dollars, which they use to fuel, so to speak, their proxies. And those proxies include Hezbollah, Hamas, the Houthis, Islamic Jihad. They are in Syria. They are in Afghanistan. They are in Iraq. They are causing these problems all in the region. And we've not only allowed them to do that, but we've essentially given them the green light. This president is so desperate to get a nuclear deal with Iran that he's willing to not only risk the safety and the security of Jews in Israel, but the safety and security of the free world, including the United States. And let's remember, Iran considers the great Satan to be the United States. The smaller Satan is Israel. And with the ballistic missile capability coupled with the nuclear weapon, that basically gives them entree to reaching the United States. And they have said that that is their intention, is to obliterate the United States and obliterate Israel. That is the issue here that most people don't realize. And so when I say that President Biden and his administration are on both sides of the war, asking money for Israel while telling Israel, well, you have to institute a ceasefire, while telling Israel you can't attack Rafah and the terrorists that are housing themselves in there, and that you must imperil yourself so that we can have an Iran nuclear deal. The United States of America, through the Biden administration, doesn't want to offend Iran. So Israel is just going to have to take more casualties. That's essentially the message that the president is sending. And now, accordingly, Chuck Schumer is sending the same message.
And I just want folks to understand that, and I know you've seen the classified briefings, I've seen the open source briefings, that the money that we've released to Iran has gone to these terrorist organizations and entities. That's not speculation. That's been proven. We know that that's happening. While they're arming Hamas, there's reports just coming out last week while I was in Israel that the United States, the Biden administration, is slow walking the munitions to Israel that they need to execute this war against Hamas. Can you speak to that?
That's exactly right. They have been slow walking. And of course, they will blame it on Congress and this aid package, which we sent, by the way. The House of Representatives sent an aid package passed in the House to the Senate. They won't take it up. And in the meantime, making sure that people in Gaza receive these food and humanitarian assistance that otherwise Hamas would be providing would have to, because Hamas is their government. That's who they voted in. That's who the people in Gaza voted to be their government. So the American taxpayers are paying for this food and shelter program comes through Hamas and through an organization called the United Nations Relief and Workers Agency. And while that's all happening, they're telling Israel to stand down. At the same time, they're telling the prime minister of Israel, the leader of Israel, that the West no longer wants him to be in a power. He's the duly elected leader of that country.
Right.
And so they're working day and night to remove him. This is astounding that the United States government, this administration, working to remove him.
Yeah. Yeah. They won't, as you said, they won't do that to China, but they'll do it to our greatest ally, Israel. Very quickly, we've got like 30 seconds left. Speaking of China, the House Oversight Committee, which you're a part of, launched a major investigation into the CCP. What can we anticipate there?
Well, it's going to be very difficult, obviously, to get information out of the CCP. Even though you can travel to China, they're never really going to let you see the things that you want to see, like the concentration camps, the forced organ harvesting program, the things that seem to come from the 1930s in Germany, yet they come in the 21st century in China. But I think we are going to try and more granularly show the American people all the way that China is subverting the United States of America and using our own policies to our own demise, so that Americans can be aware, so they'll understand when policies finally are made towards China that they need to support them.
Well, we're going to want to follow that very closely. So we look forward to having you join us to show us what the committee has uncovered with that. Congressman Scott Perry, always great to have you on the program. Thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you, Tony. God bless you.
All right, folks, even though I'm back home, we still need to be praying for Israel. If you didn't join us last week in praying, I encourage you to do so by texting Israel to 67742. Don't go away. We're back next.
Christians must be sure to faithfully think about the issues that have taken our culture and many of our churches by storm from a biblical perspective. Family Research Council's David Clawson, along with co-authors Denny Burke and Colin Smothers, released a new book, Male and Female, He Created Them, a study on gender, sexuality, and marriage to help Christians better grasp the Bible's teaching about these issues. This study presents a biblical view of homosexuality, transgenderism, and marriage. With this new resource, readers will be given guidance on specific questions related to preferred pronouns, identity, intersex conditions, and other matters that our churches must be discipling their members to respond to with love and biblical conviction. As part of the study, readers have access to supplemental videos by Dr. Albert Moeller, Dr. Heath Lambert, Reverend H.B. Charles, Dr. Christopher Yuan, Dr. Rosaria Butterfield, and others that expand and elaborate the themes of each chapter. To purchase a copy, go to hecreatedthem.org.
Today we find that global persecutions of Christians is growing more menacing every year. Family Research Council's Leila Gilbert, Ariel Del Turco, and Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin's book, Heroic Faith, shares personal stories from those who have endured religious persecution and gives a close look at the dire situations Christians often face due to dangerous and sometimes deadly opposition to their faith. The book's true stories of persistence and faithfulness amidst crisis offer inspiration and hope. Heroic Faith also provides insights into the ideologies driving the hostility and persecution, what steps the U.S. government might take to help, and how readers can best respond to the struggles of the faithful. It is critical for us to learn from our brothers and sisters who are suffering deeply and to do whatever we can to help. You can get your copy of Heroic Faith wherever books are sold or by going to frc.org/heroicfaith. Again, that's frc.org/heroicfaith. Men are constantly told that there is no place for their thoughts and concerns about abortion. However, this attitude ignores the fact that both women and men are deeply and personally affected by abortion. Furthermore, one does not have to be a woman to know that abortion ends the life of an innocent, unborn child. Every man has a role to play in protecting unborn lives and supporting the mothers in their families and greater community, which is why FRC's Center for Human Dignity has released a resource titled A Man's Guide to Standing for Life. This resource was created to help men positively address the topic of life. This guide will equip men with phrases to utilize or avoid, as well as practical tips for helping to protect life and the expectant mother or unborn child he knows. Every man has the opportunity to be an unborn baby's hero by stepping in to support a mother and speaking up for her child's life. Get this free guide at frc.org/prolifemen to learn more about the important role men play in protecting unborn lives.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. Good to have you on this, have you with us on this Monday. The website, TonyPerkins.com. Again, as we were going out to the break, squeezing out every second I could. If you didn't join us last week in praying for Israel while I was there, we're going to continue that effort to pray for them, especially given the developments here in the United States. Increasingly, the Democratic Party, the Democratic leadership, distancing themselves from Israel when they need our support the most. So text the word Israel to 67742. That's Israel to 67742. All right, it's been about 4 years since COVID-19 wrought havoc on the United States and the world, for that matter. And while we're hopefully wiser now, at least some of us, you know that the old adage, those who don't learn from history are doomed to repeat it. Well, there's a new report out that reviewed the major policy errors and lessons learned during the COVID pandemic. Among the lessons learned, leaders should calm public fears, not stoke them. Lockdowns do not work. Masks were of little or of no value and possibly harmful. Any surprise there? Joining me now to discuss this and more is Dr. Jay Bhattacharya, professor of health policy at Stanford University and one of the authors behind the 2020 Great Barrington Declaration, which advocated for an alternative approach from the government's heavy-handed approach to COVID. Dr. Bhattacharya, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you for having me.
So I think the timing of this is pretty interesting, since also at the Supreme Court, and we're going to talk about this a little bit as well today, hearing oral arguments in a case from Missouri and Louisiana pushing back on the administration's censoring of critics of their COVID policy, of which you were one. And so now, after reading, you know, skimming through a summary of this report, I know why they censored you. You were right and they were wrong.
I mean, it's striking to read the lessons in that report. It's actually hard to think of something the government really got right from the very start of the pandemic. So what was the infection fatality rate? Were everybody equally at risk of dying if they get infected? You know, is there immunity after COVID recovery? Are mass mandates an effective way of addressing the pandemic? Will the vaccine provide long-lasting immunity against infection and spreading the disease? Are there vaccine side effects? Will imposing mandates cause people to doubt the efficacy of other vaccines? On item after item after item, the government got it wrong. They absolutely got it wrong. And businesses closed, churches closed, people lost their became depressed, and there are people that are dead today as a result of the government's mismanagement of the pandemic. And they censored critics in order to create an illusion consensus that they were right, and it was a lie. And so I think that's really the key, among the key lessons of the pandemic. There needs to be an honest discussion, open. First Amendment protects American health.
You know, going through the 10 recommendations that they make, the Committee to Unleash Prosperity that was behind this report, you know, many of these things are items, in fact, almost every one of them are items you and I talked about during the pandemic itself, saying that we shouldn't be doing this. We ought to look at these alternatives. So, I mean, this is not like brain surgery. This is pretty common sense. Not only is it common sense, but it was the historical response to pandemics in most cases.
Yeah, it wasn't surprising that the government got these things wrong. If you look back over the past century, the way we've managed pandemics had been better focus on the people who are most at risk. Don't disrupt societies, because disrupting societies is bad for the health of people. Respect human rights during your pandemic response. Respect free speech, basic civil liberties. All of those kinds of don't panic the population. The idea that we could sort of wing it and come up with the right thing in order to just ignore a century of evidence and then suppress anyone who's criticizing you. I have no idea why the government thought that was going to work out, but it very clearly didn't. So many people lost their businesses. So many people, their kids became depressed, or they're up to 2 years behind in their schooling. Many people dropped out of school. There's huge numbers of people who skipped their cancer screening, right, and now have late-stage cancer. We are in a bad place, and all we really needed was an honest discussion, and the government prevented that from happening with its censorship regime.
So let me ask you a question, Dr. Bhattacharya. I consider you a medical expert, okay? And one of the recommendations from this report was not to outsource decision-making to medical experts, to take the input, but the decisions needed to be made by the elected leaders, not outsourced to these medical experts. Do you agree with that?
I think that's a very wise thing, because I think a lot of times medical experts have blinders. They view everything through a narrow prism of how can I prevent the disease that I'm trained to prevent. But of course, health is broader than the prevention of a single disease, as we saw during the pandemic. The idea that you should have a group of people who are not trained to understand what learning loss does to children's lifetime well-being, if you are not trained to understand how disruptions in our ability to worship impact our mental health, our spiritual health, who don't, in many cases, don't value anything outside of the narrow prevention of the disease that they care about, they're not actually well-equipped to make the kind of trade-off decisions that need to get made. Our elected leaders are also responsible to the public. If they make mistakes, they will get voted out of office. How will you vote right, Tony Fauci out of office? You can't do it.
Right.
Right. So you have to have people who face the consequences of making the wrong decision. And unfortunately, what we learned during the pandemic is that so-called experts are not in any way held accountable. The people who got all of this stuff wrong that we just talked about, they're giving themselves awards, Tony. They're patting themselves on the back. When there's another pandemic, and there will be another pandemic at some point in our lives, we will do the same thing again, because we've learned none of the lessons. And that's why I was sort of heartened by the report that we saw that we've been discussing, because finally we're starting to see a discussion, an opening of the discussion that things did went poorly during the pandemic. We made huge mistakes. And so right now we need to reform our system so they never happen again.
And that's a part of the recommendations going forward, is that Congress take some actions to restrict the ability of governments to really trample upon fundamental freedoms and restrict the flow of information. Which is critical to have those voices out there that the elected leadership can hear from and then make totally informed decisions that take in the whole array of issues. Dr. Bhattacharya, always great to have you on the program. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Tony.
All right, don't go anywhere, because next, Missouri Attorney General Andrew Bailey joins me on the other side of this break to talk about what happened today in the Supreme Court with the oral arguments regarding the censorship by the Biden administration. That's next.
Christians must be sure to faithfully think about the issues that have taken our culture and many of our churches by storm from a biblical perspective. Family Research Council's David Clawson, along with co-authors Denny Burke and Colin Smothers, released a new book, Male and Female, He Created Them, a study on gender, sexuality, and marriage to help Christians better grasp the Bible's teaching about these issues. This study presents a biblical view of homosexuality, transgenderism, and marriage. With this new resource, readers will be given guidance on specific questions related to preferred pronouns, identity, intersex conditions, and other matters that our churches must be discipling their members to respond to with love and biblical conviction. As part of the study, readers have access to supplemental videos by Dr. Albert Moeller, Dr. Heath Lambert, Reverend H.B. Charles, Dr. Christopher Yuan, Dr. Rosaria Butterfield, and others that expand and elaborate the themes of each chapter. To purchase a copy, go to hecreatedthem.org.
Today we find that global persecutions of Christians is growing more menacing every year. Family Research Council's Leela Gilbert, Ariel Del Turco, and Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin's book, Heroic Faith, shares personal stories from those who have endured religious persecution and gives a close look at the dire situations Christians often face due to dangerous and sometimes deadly opposition to their faith. The book's true stories of persistence and faithfulness amidst crisis offer inspiration and hope. Heroic Faith also provides insights into the ideologies driving the hostility and persecution, what steps the U.S. government might take to help, and how readers can best respond to the struggles of the faithful. It is critical for us to learn from our brothers and sisters who are suffering deeply and to do whatever we can to help. You can get your copy of Heroic Faith wherever books are sold or by going to frc.org/heroicfaith. Again, that's frc.org/heroicfaith.
Welcome back to Washington Watch, the website, TonyPerkins.com. Resources there for you, so be sure and check it out. Well, earlier today, as we mentioned, the U.S. Supreme Court heard oral arguments in a case involving the Biden administration's efforts to stifle constitutionally protected speech that it viewed as misinformation or disinformation. Basically, they didn't like critics having a voice. Now, the case, Smurthy versus Missouri, was put forward by five social media users in two states, Louisiana and Missouri, who claimed their speech was stifled when platforms removed or downgraded their post at the behest of officials in the White House, Center for Disease Control, FBI, and the Department of Homeland Security. Now, Dr. Bhattacharya, as we mentioned earlier, was one of those. Now, much of that content, by the way, turned out to be inconvenient truths for the Biden administration. But will the Supreme Court see past the Biden administration's claims and send a message that the First Amendment still matters? Joining me now to discuss this is Missouri Attorney General Andrew Bailey, who inherited the case from his predecessor and uncovered thousands of pages of documents highlighting the Biden administration's extensive censorship campaign. General Bailey, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you so much for having me on.
So, General, tell us, how do you think the oral arguments went today?
Well, I'm encouraged. I think that the Supreme Court has recognized the enormous magnitude of the First Amendment violations committed by the Biden administration and also understands that there's got to be a remedy for those violations. At the end of the day, there was a coercive relationship between federal officials and big tech social media. And the goal of the vast censorship enterprise from the federal government standpoint was to drive from public discourse any viewpoint that they disagreed with. This is protected core political speech, and the very heart of our nation's at risk here. If we don't have a free, fair, and open marketplace of ideas, we cease to have a democratic republic. And we've got to build a wall of separation between tech and state in order to protect that First Amendment right to free speech on these platforms. And that's especially true as we move into an election cycle.
Yeah, it's very troubling, as the information you uncovered, to the extent of this censorship industriplex that they've put together of censoring critics that they disagree with. But there were some comments made. I listened to the oral arguments. You were there, actually, in the courtroom. But there sounded as if some of the conservative members, or those who line up on the conservative side of the court, were protective of the government's right to question and even discourage the media from publishing certain things, including the social media platforms.
Well, there was definitely a lot of questioning about whether or not the communication between the federal officials and big tech social media rose to the level of coercion and whether that coercion actually resulted in censorship activity. But that's exactly what the evidence demonstrates. And that evidence was put on in court when we moved for a preliminary injunction at the district court level back in May. Those factual findings are now locked in as part of the district court's preliminary injunction order issued on the 4th of July. So I believe at the end of the day, the Supreme Court's going to be deferential to the factual findings that occurred at the lower court level. But I would also point out, coercion is absolutely present. Look, you can see in the emails where federal officials are demanding removal of certain posts, certain content, and then demanding that big tech change its censorship algorithms. And you can look on the back end, kind of the ripple in the pond effect, and see, at least when it comes to Facebook, as an example, internal emails in from Facebook between their employees established that Facebook changed its algorithms because of pressure from the federal government. That proves coercion. But at the end of the day, you don't have to prove coercion to establish state action. You can prove that significant encouragement resulted in the censorship, and certainly the evidence rises to that level, or that there's some kind of joint entanglement between federal officials and the big tech social media corporations in a joint censorship enterprise. And I think Justice Thomas's questioning pointed out and highlighted that the evidence supports that as well. So whether or not, regardless of the line of analysis you use, the censorship was done at the demand of the federal government.
Yeah, I mean, to me, when it comes to the First Amendment, the weight should be in favor of the First Amendment, whether it's encouragement or coercion. If I encourage you to violate someone's First Amendment, I'm still violating someone's First Amendment. And so the government is using these social media platforms as proxies in their attack on the First Amendment rights of American citizens.
Yeah, and Tony, I apologize. I'm having a little trouble hearing, but let me say this. You know, if you look at, for instance, some of the questioning by the justices, one of the Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson, one of her questions, she opined that the First Amendment hamstrings the government's ability to respond to the pandemic. Well, she's absolutely right. I mean, she and I just have a fundamental disagreement over why we have a constitution. I believe that the constitution exists to protect us from the government, whereas she believes that the constitution is somehow empowering the government to respond to a crisis and needs to be flexible to allow that to happen. It's during times of national emergency that we must be most scrupulous in our defense of our constitutional rights.
Without question, that's exactly why we have the Constitution. What do you hope the Supreme Court justices will keep in mind as they deliberate over the next few months?
Well, first and foremost, I hope they'll keep in mind the enormous magnitude of the violations here. Again, it's not just the speakers who were specifically silenced. It's anyone who would have heard the message that the speakers were trying to deliver. And thus, anyone who's received any information from big tech social media is negatively impacted by these First Amendment violations on behalf of the federal government. I would also point out that the harm is ongoing. People are self-censoring. They're less likely to talk about President Trump, election integrity, or COVID tyranny for fear of being booted off the platform. So Americans are still suffering under this oppressive regime.
So true. So true. And that's why this case is so important. And I appreciate you pressing this case all the way to the United States Supreme Court. General Bailey, good to see you today. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, sir.
All right, after the break, Frank Gaffney from the Center for Security Policy will join me to discuss President Biden's plan to put a temporary floating port off the coast of Gaza and why that's a bad, bad idea. Stay tuned for more Washington Watch.
Christians must be sure to faithfully think about the issues that have taken our culture and many of our churches by storm from a biblical perspective. Family Research Council's David Clawson, along with co-authors Denny Burke and Colin Smothers, released a new book, Male and Female, He Created Them, a study on gender, sexuality, and marriage to help Christians better grasp the Bible's teaching about these issues. This study presents a biblical view of homosexuality, transgenderism, and marriage. With this new resource, readers will be given guidance on specific specific questions related to preferred pronouns, identity, intersex conditions, and other matters that our churches must be discipling their members to respond to with love and biblical conviction. As part of the study, readers have access to supplemental videos by Dr. Albert Moeller, Dr. Heath Lambert, Reverend H.B. Charles, Dr. Christopher Yuan, Dr. Rosaria Butterfield, and others that expand and elaborate the themes of each chapter. To purchase a copy, go to hecreatedthem.org.
Today we find that global persecutions of Christians is growing more menacing every year. Family Research Council's Leila Gilbert, Ariel Del Turco, and Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin's book, Heroic Faith, shares personal stories from those who have endured religious persecution and gives a close look at the dire situations Christians often face due to dangerous and sometimes deadly opposition to their faith. The book's true stories of persistence and faithfulness amidst crisis offer inspiration and hope. Heroic Faith also provides insights into the ideologies driving the hostility and persecution, what steps the U.S. government might take to help, and how readers can best respond to the struggles of the faithful. It is critical for us to learn from our brothers and sisters who are suffering deeply and to do whatever we can to help. You can get your copy of Heroic Faith wherever books are sold or by going to frc.org/heroicfaith. Again, that's frc.org/heroicfaith. Men are constantly told that there is no place for their thoughts and concerns about abortion. However, this attitude ignores the fact that both women and men are deeply and personally affected by abortion. Furthermore, one does not have to be a woman to know that abortion ends the life of an innocent, unborn child. Every man has a role to play in protecting unborn lives and supporting the mothers in their families and greater community, which is why FRC's Center for Human Dignity has released a resource titled A Man's Guide to Standing for Life. This resource was created to help men positively address the topic of life. This guide will equip men with phrases to utilize or avoid, as well as practical tips for helping to protect life and the expectant mother or unborn child he knows. Every man has the opportunity to be an unborn baby's hero by stepping in to support a mother and speaking up for her child's life. Get this free guide at frc.org/prolifemen to learn more about the important role men play in protecting unborn lives.
All right, men, this coming Saturday, FRC Stand Courageous Men's Conference will be in Parsippany, New Jersey. We'll have Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin, former Atlanta Fire Chief Kelvin Cochran, Bill Page, myself, and many others. So to find out how you can be a part of this, it's filling up very quickly. There's a few seats left. StandCourageous.com. This is upper part of New Jersey, but New York is close by. So if you live in New York or New Jersey, you want to join us this weekend for the Stand Courageous Men's Conference, go to StandCourageous.com. Our word for today comes from Numbers chapter 16. Then Moses said to Korah, "Hear now, you sons of Levi, is it a small thing to you that the God of Israel has separated you from the congregation of Israel to bring you near to himself, to do the work of the tabernacle of the Lord and to stand before the congregation to serve them, and that he has brought you near to himself, you and all your brethren, the sons of Levi with you? And are you seeking the priesthood also?" Korah and a band of about 250 were not satisfied with their elevated place of service. They wanted more. They wanted to be priests. Moses asked, "Is the elevated position that God gave you a small, insignificant thing in your eyes?" See, what happened, this rebellion exposed their hearts. And quite frankly, it should prompt us to search ours. Their desire was not to serve the Lord in some greater way, but to elevate themselves in the eyes of man. To find out more about our journey through the Bible, go to frc.org/Bible. And by the way, I invite you to join us in this two-year journey through the Bible. I have a daily devotional every morning. So simply text the word Bible to 67742. That's Bible to 67742 to find out how you can join us on this journey. Well, a handful of U.S. military vessels departed from the U.S. East Coast last week en route to the coast of Gaza, where President Biden has ordered the construction of a temporary pier or port to deliver humanitarian aid. The president's plan, which was announced during his State of the Union address earlier this month, could involve more than 1,000 U.S. troops. Now, no boots on the ground. I guess they'll be walking on water. And it'll take about 2 months. And it's raised a lot of questions on both sides of the political aisle. Was this a hastily conceived political move by the president to regain support he lost over his handling of the Israel-Hamas war? And what could be the implications of this decision? Joining me now to discuss this is Frank Gaffney, the founder and executive chairman of the Center for Security Policy. Frank, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Tony, thank you for having me.
So Frank, before we get into Biden's terrorist port, I want to touch on another topic you and I are concerned about, which is very relevant, given the oral arguments today before the U.S. Supreme Court about government censoring the critics of their COVID-19 policies. Today, the World Health Organization's intergovernmental negotiating body met in Geneva, and the Secretary General, Tedros Ghebreyesus, who was pushing to make what the Biden administration did during COVID the norm, had this to say.
If we miss this opportunity, we risk losing momentum. More importantly, we risk leaving the world exposed to the same shortcomings that hampered the global response to COVID-19. A lack of coordination, a lack of sharing information, and a lack of equity.
Frank, you've been sounding the alarm over the World Health Organization and Dr. Tedros's power grab. Speak to that.
Well, Tony, as have you, and I'm very proud to be partnered with you in our sovereignty coalition, as we call it, which has exposed a lot of what's afoot here, as well as given people things to do about it. The short form of it is, as I think you've suggested, if you liked what the World Health Organization did in an advisory role during the pandemic of recent memory, you're going to love what it will be able to do when it can order you, compel you to do various things, among them being denied information about the best kind of medical treatment for whatever problem we may be facing at the time. All of this flows from the idea that somehow rewarding an agency that proved to be terribly corrupt and incompetent in that pandemic experience should be made more powerful, to the point where that gentleman that you were just hearing from, the director general of the World Health Organization, will be the arbiter of when any nation in the world, including ours, has a public health emergency and what must be done about it. This is totally unconstitutional in our country, an affront to our sovereignty for sure, but also, Tony, a threat to your personal medical freedom. And it's unconscionable, right, and it must be stopped.
Yeah. And you look at the report, I was covering this earlier with Dr. Bhattacharya, the nonprofit committee to unleash prosperity, and their report on the government's response to COVID, you know, everything they got it wrong on, the same process is put into this global pandemic accord that's being pushed by the WHO. So, I mean, it's not like we have to guess, will this work or not? We know it won't work. It'll simply trample upon the rights and freedoms of Americans and, of course, you know, the 194 other nations that would be a part of this pandemic accord. I mean, this is not guesswork. We know where it's going.
Yeah, we've seen this movie, as you say, Tony. Here's the thing. What I believe most Americans don't fully appreciate yet is this is basically the product of what was called in the pandemic the China model. And the idea is that they're now going to make it possible for Tedros Ghebreyesus to impose that same China model on us at any time in the future. And what does that mean? That means the things like mask mandates, social distancing, lockdowns, mandatory vaccinations, including with inadequately tested, you know, treatments of various kinds, and a digital gulag that will essentially compel you to conform. Did anybody like that during the last exercise? Heavens no.
Exactly.
But they don't know that this is going to be compelled upon them in the future.
Right. There'll be no question. It will be the standard operating procedure. But here's what people need to know. The only way to stop this is, you know, we're calling on Congress to defund it. But with the slim majority, one seat majority we have in the House, and it doesn't look like that's going to happen in this tranche of funding. This ultimately is going to come down to elections. This is the policies that we get from a leftist administration like the Biden administration. Trump, President Trump, during his administration, actually cut off the funding, pulled us out of the WHO, as he did cut off the funding to UNRWA. So elections have consequences.
Big time. And Tony, as you say, they will possibly mutate beyond recognition our nation in the interval between now and when this election takes place. So I think it's imperative, and we've got at the sovereigntycoalition.org website a vehicle for directly engaging with your elected representatives and telling them you want no part of this, you want us out of the World Health Organization, yeah. But at a minimum, we need to stop paying for what it's going to do to us.
Yeah, absolutely. Stop the funding and get out of there. All right. Last week, I was in Israel. We were communicating by text, and you sent a piece to me, some facts you put together on the port in Gaza, and I happened to be there right at the border of Gaza. And well thought out, I want you to explain to our viewers and our listeners that this is not just, I mean, humanitarian aid to Gaza, it sounds good. Oh, we're compassionate people. We want to help the people. But there's plenty of humanitarian support that's going in there. You've made that point clear. There's something more to this. Let's talk about it.
100%. Well, Tony, you suggested that maybe this was just sort of something lashed up on the spur of the moment to give the president something to talk about in light of the rebuke that he received from Muslim voters in Michigan. I think this has actually been a plan for quite some time, specifically of Samantha Power, who, as you know, is not only the U.S. Agency for International Development director, but she's been a longtime activist in and out of government on behalf of the Palestinians. And she has as her purpose, as I believe does the administration more generally, to save Hamas. They're not really interested in having the Israelis succeed. They profess to be aligned with them and standing by them and supporting them and so on. But as you know, Tony, and I'm sure you saw it on the ground firsthand, what this administration has been doing has been inexorably creating more and more and more obstacles to the Israelis defeating Hamas decisively, as they must. There is no other alternative other than losing their own country. But this idea of putting Americans on the ground in force with a port, and you're right, they won't be walking on water very long. They'll be walking on the ground. They'll be inserting themselves in the way between the Israelis and the Palestinians. And here's the thing, there's plenty of food there at the moment. It's just mostly being ripped off by who? By Hamas. It is keeping them a going concern, not least by selling this stuff. How's it going to change?
How's that going to change with the port?
I think it'll be made worse, because who knows what's going to be coming in through that port. As things stand now, the Israelis have some oversight of what is being shipped in. You start bringing it in from sea and they're not in the middle, it's going to go directly from whoever's providing it. Maybe it's the Chinese, maybe it's the Russians, maybe it's us, who knows, but that it will go into the hands directly of Hamas and further enable them to fight on.
But would that not then, when those issues come to the forefront, possibly draw the United States deeper into this, where they then have to be there at the port distributing and even putting themselves between the Palestinians and the Israelis?
I think that's the idea. That certainly has been Samantha Power's idea for decades. She's been talking about having the United States protecting the Palestinians against the Israelis. So, yes, we will be in there. And Tony, as you understand, and I'm sure your audience does as well, the thing is, if Hamas survives all this, it's not just going to be a problem for Israel. It's a problem for us, too. They're opposed to Judeo-Christian civilization. They're Sharia supremacists. They will seek our destruction just as surely as they seek that of Israel. They just have to get through the speed bump of Israel first. And the Biden administration is helping them get through that speed bump. It's that simple.
I want to go back, though, to how we may be positioning U.S. troops there in Gaza at this makeshift Biden port if Powers power is correct or she's successful in what she's pushing for, we have history here. This is not something that is unprecedented. Back in the 80s, we nearly saw conflict, as you've pointed out in your briefing on this, between U.S. soldiers and IDF in Lebanon.
Well, there's that. And then there's the other example, Beirut, in which large numbers of American servicemen were murdered by Palestinian terrorists working with Iran. This is the kind of thing that I think you can absolutely predict will come about. And it may involve, you know, conflict with the Israelis. But here's the really important takeaway from some recent polling, Tony. You might have seen some of it when you were on the ground there. The Israeli public overwhelmingly supports the defeat of Hamas decisively in Rafah, among other places, even if it produces a conflict with the United States. That's evidence of how determined they are and how clear-eyed the vast majority of Israelis are that they have no choice. They must win or they will be doomed. And they're right.
That's what I heard. I mean, I heard that from citizens. I heard that from government leaders. I heard that from the prime minister himself. They are resolute. Now, they would love to have America with them, but they're going without them because they know their future is on the line here. They're living in a neighborhood that's pretty rough. They don't have two seas on each side protecting them. They know that if they cannot fight to a draw, they have to fight to win, or else you're going to have every other bully in that neighborhood coming after them.
You know, and this, Tony, as you know, and I think it's important to say it explicitly, this is not just some notion of Bibi Netanyahu that is unsupported by the public. And if only they got rid of Benjamin Netanyahu, which the Biden administration is explicitly seeking to do, not just Chuck Schumer, by the way, but the administration itself. They will not find the public is opposed to him. They will be supporting him. And that's because of this very clear recognition of the unfortunate reality. You put a Palestinian state on the ground there, there was one in Gaza for that matter, you will see Israel destroyed. In fact, I heard the other day that had there been a Palestinian state on October 7th, Israel would not have survived it. We mustn't let that happen again.
Yeah, if they have a state, they then can have an army. Then they can have all of the military support that an army would have. They didn't have that, and look what they did. Just think of what they would have if they had the military of a standing state.
Yeah, well, and we've been trying to give them in the so-called West Bank, Judea and Samaria, to the Palestinian Authority, a pretty substantial army.
Right.
It's not fully capable, but it's got a lot of weapons that are capable of doing an October 7th to the people in those settlements on the West Bank.
And we've been training
what they did in October 7th at any time. We have been training them too. You're absolutely right.
Yeah.
That's a nightmare.
Frank Gaffney, appreciate you joining us. Appreciate the work you do at the Center for Security Policy.
You're a blessing to me. Thank you, Tony. It's always good to talk.
All right. Frank Gaffney, to find out more, go to the website, tonyperkins.com, and follow the links over. Again, folks, I want to encourage you to pray for Israel. Text Israel to 67742. So much to deal with, but we can pray, we can vote, and we can stand. Speaking of standing, I leave you once again with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul, who says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, when you've taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.